A little over a decade ago, the Philadelphia Society honored another of its founding fathers, Russell Kirk, at a memorable meeting in Dearborn, Michigan. Dr. Kirk is no longer with us, but we are privileged to have here today his indefatigable life partner, Annette. As it happens, Mrs. Kirk was herself present at the Society's first national meeting and has been a devoted member for many years. As most of you know, she directs the Russell Kirk Center for Cultural Renewal, which works to perpetuate Dr. Kirk's intellectual legacy. She is also an active trustee of the Laura Bush Foundation for America's Libraries. We have asked her to offer a Kirkian perspective on the wilderness and the promised land. Ladies and gentlemen, Annette Kirk.
Well, we all know that no one can stand in for Stan. So when Bill Campbell asked me to do this, I immediately called Stan and said, I need a story, a quip, something clever from you to lessen our dismay at not having you present at our luncheon. Stan replied, well, here's a reflection that might work. After doing research for the book I'm writing entitled Joe McCarthy, The Untold Story, my research has confirmed Evan's Law of Inadequate Paranoia, which reads, no matter how bad you think something is, when you look at it, it's always worse. And you're not now sure that you agree with what McCarthy was trying to do, but you really do like his methods. So Stan lives, and Stan is with us today. I first met Stan in 1960 at Great Elm, the Buckley's family home, where 100 student activists from almost every state had gathered to form a national youth organization. It's interesting to know that there were 95 males and 5 females. And of course, I was the secretary, so. Some things are the same. Frustrated with ineffective government programs, remember we were about 19, 20 years old, frustrated with ineffective government programs and irresponsible spending, the erosion of cultural institutions such as the church and the family, and with declining standards in education, the group came together for a weekend of reflection. On Friday night and all day Saturday, we debated the principles we wished the group to espouse, and animatedly argued over the content of the charter and even the name for the group. After dinner, when we realized that we still did not have a consensus, we slowly began to panic as the schedule said that a statement of principles was to be presented to the group for approval on Sunday morning at breakfast. Suddenly, at 10 p.m., the door burst open and in walked Stan. Weekend deadlines for the Indianapolis Star-Ledger meant that he wasn't able to get away earlier. As the youngest editor in the country at the time, he was a star to us young Americans for freedom, as we had decided to call ourselves just a few hours earlier. Stan sat suavely smoking a cigarette, looking like Humphrey Bogart, listening to us for some time tell him what we wanted in our statement. Soon, he began drawling out carefully crafted words of wisdom. We youth, a decade younger, hung on his every word. As secretary for the group, I recorded his clear, concise statements. The next morning, we all enthusiastically approved the document as the Sharon Statement. Several in this room were present on that occasion, including the president of this society, Lee Edwards. Stan continued to serve the conservative movement, both as a wordsmith and by founding the National Journalism Center, training thousands of young, aspiring writers, among them three of our daughters. We all owe a great deal of gratitude to Stan for his efforts to inform and inspire the rising generation. Two, we are grateful for groups like the Philadelphia Society, where conservatives of all ages can gather to hear speakers, to participate in panels, and to debate the premises upon which rest our morals and our markets. We know that it took some years in the wilderness before the word conservative came into general usage, and that it only became a movement because of the perseverance of the legion of persons and groups who carried its banner, many of whom are present here this weekend. Today, when conservatives have become a political and economic force and seem to be everywhere, being discussed on the airwaves and written about in the print media, where much is being made of our internal agreements, disagreements on a variety of issues, it may be well to time to reiterate what Russell said in 1993 at the Dearborn meeting of the Philadelphia Society. He said, "Conservatism is not merely a matter of party or faction, but a state of mind, a way of looking at reality sustained by a body of sentiments. It may also be helpful to reflect at this point in our historical journey that among conservatism's unique and distinguishing characteristics is its concern not only for the mind, but for the heart and the hearth, for the moral imagination, for the sublime and the beautiful. The treatise on aesthetics that Edmund Burke wrote at the age of 19, long before he became a statesman. While such humane and cultural concerns may not lend themselves to sound bites on the nightly news, they do relate to the deeper longings of humanity and are the premises upon which most conservatives agree, even if they don't always give them as much attention as they might. A young man once asked, "Dr. Kirk, do you have a recipe, a plan for political action?" Russell replied that if we wish to make long-term reforms in society, we must turn again to custom, convention, constitution, and prescription. When in 1953, The Conservative Mind was published, Henry Regnery claimed that the book gave the growing conservative movement coherence and identity, and provided, as we heard just a little while before, the unifying concept for a variety of groups on the right who, in Bill Rush's words, knew what they were against, but not exactly what they were for. Listed as the first canon of conservatism was belief that a divine intent rules society as well as conscience, forging an eternal chain of right and duty which links great and obscure, living and dead. In the seventh and last edition, this canon was broadened to belief in a transcendent order or body of natural law as well as conscience. Russell then went on to list five other canons of conservatism. It is, however, this first canon that continues to define traditional conservative thought and around which we must rally if we are to maintain the vitality of our movement. 10 years ago, this same weekend, as the Philadelphia Society was holding its annual meeting in Chicago, Russell, who had been ill for some months, left us for eternal life. But just days before he died, he gathered round him our family and the Wilbur Fellows that we always have living with us, and he wished to read us Chesterton's Ballad of the White Horse, wishing to communicate truths and sentiments that he was still discovering and wanted to share with us. We listened in charmed awe as his dramatic reading of one of the last great epic poems in the English language, a timeless allegory about the ongoing battle between believers and nihilistic heathens. The poem incorporates imagination, moral concerns, continuity, wisdom, and fancy. All the tools needed to inspire the rising generation to reclaim the culture, to redeem the time. The challenge to the present generation of conservatively minded young people to do this is indeed great. Theirs is a complex landscape to navigate in a world in which new rules are continually being introduced concerning not only national security, the economy, and technology, but in areas previously thought secure, such as gender and genetics. Yet, if we, their mentees, teach them to love and desire to defend the permanent things, they will take up this task enthusiastically and perform ably. For four decades, the Philadelphia Society has provided a forum to share such larger concerns, a place to enjoy the warmth of being with old and new friends, and an opportunity to meet a wonderful assemblage of bright young scholars. We are grateful to the Society for arranging these gatherings and pray that it may continue to prosper for many more years yet to come. Thank you for your kindness.